Last night at the Sanger Theater, I went and saw one of the new touring Broadway musicals. It's called Hell's Kitchen. And I go to see all the Broadway shows there. My fiance and I, Julia, really get a kick out of doing that. We have a little sort of tradition. We go get a drink. We go see the play. We have a great time. Hell's Kitchen knocked my socks off, man. You've got to go see Hell's Kitchen. I can't recommend it strongly enough. I understand there's probably some people listening who are like, I don't care about Broadway. I don't go to the theater. And that's fine. We're all here to do what we're all here to do. If I can convince you otherwise, great. But I'm speaking now to people who would enjoy taking their wife or husband or mother or kids or friend, business associate, whatever, out for a night on the town. Visit the beautiful, historic Sanger Theater on Canal Street and go see Hell's Kitchen. And I say this with a little bit of authority because, like I said, I've seen just about every single touring Broadway show that's been here in the last couple of years. And Hell's Kitchen knocks them all out of the water. Hamilton, nothing. Got nothing on Hell's Kitchen. I won't say a ton about it, but Hell's Kitchen is what they call a jukebox musical. It's a musical where some or all of the songs are from pop music. It's music that we know. This musical is built with songs written by Alicia Keys. And I don't know, Alicia Keys has been in and out of our lives for like the last 25 years. I don't particularly care about Alicia Keys. I've never considered myself a big Alicia Keys fan. I've never bought her music. I would probably not leap to attend an Alicia Keys concert. But this musical is incredible. It's captivating. It's got great energy. It's the choreography is fantastic. The singing is fantastic. It's a visual feast. It's got beautiful costumes and set pieces. And it's a very, very touching story. You know, it's called Hell's Kitchen because of the neighborhood in New York City. I think it's sort of an Alicia Keys autobiography, right? So it's about a young woman growing up in New York City. She's trying to find her way. She learns how to play the piano. She's got a love life that's complicated. She's got a family, a home situation that's a little bit busted. And on paper, I don't know, that didn't look that interesting to me. But the execution of this show was so good that the entire audience unhesitatingly leapt to its feet for a rousing standing ovation. I mean, the curtain is barely even up. The performers aren't even on stage for curtain call before everyone's going nuts for Hell's Kitchen. Young, old, black, white, regular theater people, non-regular theater people, moved mountains this show. I can't say enough about it, but I strongly encourage you to go see Hell's Kitchen. It's playing at the Sanger, opened last night. They got performances all the way through Sunday. Go see Hell's Kitchen at the Sanger Theater. I did, and I'm so glad that I did. We have a great show today. There's a lot to talk about. We're going to see what we can squeeze in here. It is, of course, New Year's Eve. Happy New Year's to you. The price of silver has exploded thanks to demand from artificial intelligence and some other new technologies. But, you know, that's not great news for everybody. For silver investors and people who are looking to sell their silver, yeah, great. The price has exploded. You get more money for your silver. But there could be some problems to this. There could be some reasons that we shouldn't be too enthusiastic about this. China's making a major move here. I believe this major move goes into effect tonight at midnight. And this is going to probably send prices even higher and maybe like forever. Hard to see silver prices coming down in a meaningful way after China does this thing at midnight. There are some industrialists out there, some people who are experts in the field of commodity trading and financial markets, who are looking at this with a great deal of concern. And so what we're going to do is we're going to speak to the professor of finance and the director of the Global Energy Management Institute at the University of Houston. His name is Craig Perrong, and he's going to be on with us in just about 10 minutes here. At 2:10, we're going to talk to Debbie Bressler. You remember Debbie. She's from the Crescent City Countdown Club. We're going to get the details from her on the NOLA New Year's Eve fireworks show that's happening tonight. We'll figure out what's planned, what's new this year, and, you know, just talk about the best way to ring in the new year in New Orleans. I've always been enthusiastic about going to see the fireworks show at midnight on New Year's, and I can't wait to talk to Debbie about that. Maybe dole out some pro tips for some of you who are maybe less familiar with how to get around the French Quarter when there's, you know, an extra 50,000 people down there, whatever. I can tell you all about it. In the 3 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to a man named Robert Lawless, and we're going to talk to him about a particular federal agency whose sole mission, the only mission, is to protect you and I and other working class Americans from bank fraud, from hidden fees, predatory lending, predatory debt collection. You know, when you get a surprise fee on your credit card, it's like, oh, you didn't use your credit card in this correct way, or you were a day late on your payment, and now there's all, you owe us all this extra money. Stuff like that. There is a federal agency whose entire mission is to stand up for you and I against those big, you know, multi-billion dollar international companies who love to just chuck extra fees at you and screw you over, knowing that you may not have the time or the resources, the bandwidth to fight back. And the easier thing to do is just kind of roll over and pay the fee and try and get on with your life. Naturally, in our time, in our age here, this federal agency is on the brink of collapse. It's actually facing an existential crisis. We're talking, of course, about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. It hasn't been around for terribly long, but notably, it turns a profit. Not every federal agency returns more money to the tax coffers than it takes out, right? But because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau recoups some of this money from credit card companies and mortgage lenders and stuff like that, and then they turn around and they give that money back into the general fund. And that money gets spent on highways and airports and road improvements and, you know, whatever else we want to spend federal tax money on. Robert Lawless is a professor of law, and he's the co-director of the Illinois Program on Law, Behavior, and Social Science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. And he'll be on with us at 3:25 again to talk about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and why it's on the eve of total collapse. Yesterday on the show, we spoke a little bit about the fraud cases in Minnesota. We spoke a little bit about the strikes in Venezuela. Maybe it was Venezuela. We don't know. It could have been somewhere else. It could have not happened at all. We talked about the strikes in Nigeria. We can revisit some of that today. Some of those stories are still ongoing. And I did want to follow up on something I mentioned yesterday. You know, I made this 22-hour long drive down from Providence, Rhode Island to New Orleans over the weekend because a couple of my flights got canceled and I didn't want to keep playing the flight cancellation roulette game. So my fiance and I just rented a car and hauled ass down here. And we went to not one, not two, but three Buc-ee's on the way back and had ample opportunity to try some of the hot food, try some of the different flavor of jerky, try some of the beaver nugs. And so I thought maybe we could play a sort of little game today, gamify it a little bit. And, well, let's see if we can rank some of the food at Buc-ee's. Like if you had only just 10 seconds to run into a Buc-ee's and then run back out, you know, what would you grab? If price is no object, but you got 10 seconds just to sprint into a Buc-ee's and sprint back out to the car, what are you picking up? I didn't plan this, but it so happens that Coleman's in the jar and he's wearing a Buc-ee's beanie. What Buc-ee's did you get that beanie from?
I did not get this at any Buc-ee's because I've never been to a Buc-ee's.
Was that a gift?
That was a gift from Scoop.
Yes. Oh, that's right. I remember you because he loves to go to Buc-ee's.
Yeah.
That guy drives out to the Buc-ee's in Mississippi just like for something to do on a Thursday night. And he comes back and he brings us treats. He always brings me the drizzled popcorn.
I've had the drizzled popcorn.
And he brought you a Buc-ee's beanie.
Yeah. I've also had some friends that bought me some ghost pepper beef jerky.
Yeah.
And the scorpion sauce. Now, right there on your phone, this is another coincidence.
What is this?
That's a list of my top 50 most attractive women. What? I want you to zoom in and read number two.
Alicia Keys
is my second most attractive woman on the planet, in my opinion. So when you was talking about that and you was talking about Hell's Kitchen, I immediately thought it was a Matt Murdock play. I was like, oh, I would love to go see Matt Murdock in Hell's Kitchen if that's Daredevil for those who aren't.
No, initially. No, yeah, yeah.
All right, so, but when you said it was about Alicia Keys, I was like,
You should go check it out, maybe.
It was kind of loosely based on her.
I wish I'd known. I might have been able to get you a ticket to go see it with us last night, but I think you'd enjoy it. I mean, it's like I said, it's semi-autobiographical, mm-hmm. so it's like loosely based on Alicia Keys' life. It's not, as opposed to like the Neil Diamond musical, right. which I saw last month, which is like the Neil Diamond story. The main character is Neil Diamond. But man, I walked out of that theater feeling great because I've seen a bunch of those plays. Like I saw Back to the Future, which was, the important thing is those performers are getting work.
So
you know what I'm saying?
Do you think the fact that you went there with tempered expectations that kind of heightened the wow because it kind of caught you by surprise?
Okay, yeah,
that's fair to say. That's not to take away from.
Like
it.
I said, on paper, I'm like, okay, a coming of age story about a young woman in New York City who learns how to play the piano. I'm like, okay. You know, I'm not going to fall over myself to spend money to go see that. But, you know, I go see these musicals and I try to keep an open mind about it. Some of them are better than others. That's inevitable. But this one just came out of nowhere, man. Just out of left field, off the top rope. Just it was my favorite thing that I've seen in years. Like I said, better than Hamilton, better than Les Miserables or some of the other like sort of big Les Miserables, the other musicals that we might be familiar with. But this just came out on Broadway 2 years ago and it's touring and it's incredible.
Okay. Well, I say all that to say this. I think the ghost pepper beef jerk is my favorite Buc-ee's food, even though I've never been to a Buc-ee's.
Well, next time I go, I'll bring you back some cinnamon beaver nugs. We'll step away here and we're going to come back with Craig Perrong. The way to get in touch with me today is the Oakenheart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. That number is 504-260-1870. I will read 100% of the text messages you send me today. I will reply to as many as I can, and the very best ones I will read on the air, so make them count. I'm Ian Hoke, sitting in for Scoot. He'll be back on Monday. I'll be back right after this. Stick around. While I was on holiday, I was up in Concord, New Hampshire with my fiance for Christmas. And over the weekend, then I got a text from a friend of mine, longtime friend of mine, a guy I met in college, somebody I really respect, really intelligent guy, smart guy. He reads a lot. He knows a lot about a lot of different kinds of things. But he texts me and see what he sent me. And sometimes this guy will text me stuff like, you know, the moon landing wasn't real or the moon is hollow. That's where I got that story idea, if you remember that. But he texts in, he says, or he texted me on my phone. He says, you got to go buy some silver, man. Get your hands on some silver. Get all the physical silver you can. Do it this weekend. You'll be sad if you didn't. Love you, bro. So, you know, I looked into it a little bit. And yeah, I'm not a commodities guy. I don't own any precious metals. But silver prices have gone through the roof, driven by AI and their use in solar panels and some other high-tech manufacturing applications. And so now China is making moves that could tighten the global supply and drive the price even higher. So why should I care? Why are normal people suddenly talking about silver like it's toilet paper at the beginning of the pandemic? You know, I have invited Craig Perrong onto the show today to help us make some sense of this. He is a professor of finance and director of the Global Energy Management Institute at the University of Houston. Professor, welcome to the show and thanks for making time.
Thank you for having me.
Honestly, are you also getting texts from friends asking you about silver and telling you to go buy silver before it's too late?
No, I haven't gotten any texts from friends about that. You know, they know I follow things by myself, and so they don't need to prompt me to pay attention to these things.
I guess I should be thankful that I have friends that know that I don't have a lot of money to throw around, and maybe they want to help me get some silver. All right, so explain to us what's happening here, Professor. The price of silver looks like it's just about tripled since earlier this year. How do you explain that? How does that happen? Why aren't other commodities doing that at the same time?
Well, it's important to bring up other commodities. One thing that's been remarkable about the past year is that oil prices have been relatively weak, but metals overall and precious metals in particular have been strong. And so throughout the year, gold has risen, platinum has risen, palladium has risen, copper has risen. The real sort of break between silver, platinum, copper, and palladium and gold is basically, going back to late November, right around Thanksgiving. And one way that people look at this is the gold-silver ratio. And, you know, the gold-silver ratio was relatively flat through most of the year, meaning that gold and silver were tending to rise pretty much together.
Right.
But at the end of November, basically then, silver spiked up relative to gold. And like I said, you know, these other commodities did as well. The fact that you know, these other metal commodities are going up at the same time suggests that, you know, there's, you know, maybe some fundamental factors, because these are all metals that are used in, as you noted in your introduction, in a variety of, you know, industrial kinds of applications. And so I think that, yeah, so the, you have sort of two stories going on here. One is the sort of the general rise in metals through the year, and then the breakout of these other metals, including silver, later in the year. And yeah, it could be, you know, sort of speculative driven, but the fact that it's happening among a variety of commodities suggests that there's something fundamental going on.
It sounds a bit to me like, this is just me, but I never really thought about silver as being one of these metals that we talk about in the conversation where we talk about like rare earth metals. Like, I think we all understand these minerals that are, we don't really think about them, but they are absolutely essential in the manufacture of batteries and solar panels and stuff like that. So I also remember too, before the big, you know, chip shortage, we didn't really ever have to think about semiconductors, but now suddenly, you know, securing the semiconductor supply chain is like priority one for the Biden administration. Is it safe to say that silver has now kind of moved into that territory where it's not just, you know, something that we think about like a pirate chest or coins or our grandparents' dishware? Like, now it's actually something that we really have to think hard about, not only as a government, as regulators, but as individuals.
Yeah, and you bring out an important point, is that silver sort of has, you know, sort of a dual identity or a couple things driving it. So, yeah, so it is, you know, sort of a store of value. People have it as coins or, you know, as an investment, things of that nature. But it also does have widespread industrial applications. And this has been true. I mean, if you want to go back, you know, I'm old, and so I remember back in the Hunt silver thing, back in 1979, 1980. There was also, you know, then a relatively large commercial demand for silver, but that was mainly from photography. Now it's from other uses. And that's where you have this interplay in silver, which is kind of interesting, between sort of speculative store of value kinds of considerations on the one hand and industrial applications on the other. And so that's what makes it so, somewhat unusual as a commodity and different as a commodity. That's why I think it's sometimes its behavior is a little bit harder to understand because of the interplay between these two very different drivers.
Really interesting. Okay, great. I think I'm understanding more about this now. If we can move, Professor, to talk more about what China is doing. They're going to be tightening control over their exports. To me, as a layperson, that sounds kind of ominous. That sounds like bad news for everybody who needs silver, you know, not just to make, you know, artificial intelligence centers and solar panels, but everything else. What is China doing, and why is it a problem for the rest of the world?
So you also brought up another good point earlier about, you know, rare earths, and sort of China had, you know, sort of has a stranglehold on rare earths, and it's tightened and loosened that stranglehold, recently. But as it loosened up on rare earths, it seems to have tightened up on silver. Now, it doesn't have the same stranglehold over the silver market as it does over, rare earths. But it is a major player, and the prospect of reduced exports from China, is contributing to this. Although the price run up, we really knew that China was going to do this towards the end of October, and that was about a month before, sort of this spike that I alluded to earlier. Mm-hmm. China's, there's definitely something about that, and I think it's a lot of it is just, Chinese policy frequently can be quite difficult to understand exactly what they're doing, what is really going to be the impact of this new licensing regime, how tightly are they going to enforce it. And so that's a source of uncertainty that I think is driving some of this latest run-up.
So there really is no consensus or maybe even no way to even really meaningfully know or say if this is a long-term strategy or if China is just trying to gain some short-term leverage here. Is that right?
That's exactly correct. And, this is part of a larger game between the United States and the Trump administration and China. This has a tit for tat aspect to it. China says, oh, we're going to ease off on rare earths, but, we're going to tighten up on silver. And, that, like I say, it's taking place in the context of this much bigger game between China and the U.S. And knowing how that game is going to play out and how the Chinese are playing it is very difficult to know from the outside.
I'm curious to just to hang on to China for one more moment. They have the kind of, is it true to say they have the lion's share of rare earth metals that are still under the ground?
Well, so that's not so much under the ground. Where China's advantage is in the processing. So basically processing of rare earth metals is very highly polluting. And it's basically our environmental restrictions in the United States and other Western countries have basically made it prohibitively costly to process rare earths here. As opposed to China, which is evidently willing to live with the environmental consequences.
Yeah.
And so rare earths really aren't that rare, but it's the processing the processing sector is dominated by China, and that's what gives them the leverage here.
So it's not that they just won the geological lottery and had all the silver and all the lithium, underneath Chinese soil. It's that the Chinese Communist Party is willing to process this material in a way that might be, harmful to the environment, harmful to their citizens, in a way that the rest of the world, especially in the West, are not. And that's why they seem to continually have the advantage when we have these conversations.
Absolutely. And the only thing that I would change in what you just said is might. They've definitely been willing to accept. They've definitely been willing to accept environmental consequences that the United States and other countries outside of China have not been willing to accept.
Great, great, great. I'm learning so much. I love this. OK, so back here in the States, if silver stays this expensive, and again, for the reasons we have just gone through, there's no guarantee that it will. Right. Before I move on. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay, great. So if silver stays expensive, where does that show up in my life, in my producer's life, in the life of people listening? Do our phones cost more? Does, Grok, Gemini, these products only start costing more because the server farms cost more to construct? What happens to us if silver stays this expensive? How do we feel that?
Well, silver is important, but a relatively small component of the overall cost and the kinds of things that you've seen. So the people that are actually buying the silver to use in their various industrial applications, that will basically, be a hit on their profits. But it's going to be hard for you and I and your listeners to really see anything demonstrable about that. It's like different than, if OPEC, cuts production and you see that the price of the gasoline at the pump goes up by a buck. It's, there's so many other components that are used and other processes that are used in conjunction with silver that you're not really going to see the silver price per se come through to you, except maybe when you go to the jewelry store.
Right. Okay. Well, good. I'm glad you mentioned that because the friend of mine who texted me last week and kind of got me on this whole train of thought in the first place, he had explained that he went to Causeway Coin here in New Orleans and bought some silver there like 5 days ago. And even just in that 5 days, the price of the silver, the value of the silver that he purchased is up like 20 or 30% or something. So for people who are listening today and thinking, oh, man, maybe I should actually do something. What is the calm, rational response? How do we keep, people acting responsibly in a situation like this? I mean, not just you and I having this conversation on the radio, but you know, is there a risk of like a silver panic? Are we going to see people rushing out and spending their life savings on silver only to see the price collapse in February?
Well, I would recommend that, you know, individual investors and individual savers, you know, not jump on this bandwagon, because that usually does not end well. And, you know, again, sort of harking back to history, if you look at the, you know, sort of the Hunt Silver episode, you know, there was something called Silver Thursday where the price crashed on one day because of regulatory intervention. And then, you know, within a few weeks, you know, the price of silver was, you know, 20% of what it had been at the peak. And so just as things can rocket up, they can also fall pretty quickly. And yeah, that's not unusual in commodity markets. So, I would not rush in to follow this trend, because that trend can turn pretty quickly.
Excellent. Okay, Professor, I have just a couple minutes left. I do want to get to some of these questions I'm getting on my text line from the listening audience.
Sure.
Rusty is listening today, and he says, ask the professor if he thinks it has to do with half of the world wanting to go back to the gold standard and or stable coins and the new digital currency. The U.S. wants to implement to basically get rid of the debt and stay in control. So is it other countries that buying all these metals, or people in our country that's purchasing all these metals?
Well, it's a worldwide phenomenon. And, you know, in fact, if you look at the London silver price, that's actually going up more than the price in the United States. And it's higher than the price in the United States right now, whereas usually the situation was the reverse. That's sort of the macro angle of things, is that, you know, one thing that precious metals do is that their price goes up as the value of fiat currency goes down. They're basically mirror images of one another. So if you were thinking about a return to the gold standard, though, that would explain. The gold price rising, but it would not explain this recent rise in silver relative to gold. So I think that there's something to that, but it's not. I don't think it's the main explanation for the run up in silver, particularly.
I think in response to my question about, you know, what does this mean for normal people? Here's a text that says, "What do you honestly believe is going to happen? Anything that requires silver to be part of the manufacturing of an item is going to go up." Is it that simple, Professor? Like if I make an iPhone and it has a certain amount of silver in it, and suddenly that silver costs me $100 more to acquire, do I turn around and then ask the customer for $100 more, or is it a little more nuanced than that?
Well, it's a little bit more nuanced. And the first thing is that, you know, even though silver is an important part of many things, it's, you know, not a dominant cost driver for most things. And so that's, you know, that's why the rise in the price of silver can get sort of lost in the other noise. The other thing is that whenever you have a price of something like silver that's an input to other things like phones, like you said, it basically, the price of the consumer goes up, but also the margin that the producer receives goes down. So basically, you know, in this case, you know, Apple will, you know, its profits will be a little bit lower. The prices that you pay will be a little bit higher.
I think we all learned a lot here, Professor. I thank you for your time, your work, and your weight. But before we let you go, I'm just curious, in your line of work at the University of Houston, if you had to look into your crystal ball into 2026, what do you think is kind of the top storyline? What's the thing that you're talking about at cocktail parties and around the dinner table with your friends in regard to, you know, what you know about finance and commodities and what the economies in these big countries are going to look like next year?
Well, yeah, I think that the big issue is sort of the macro picture. I mean, when the Trump tariffs went into effect, there are all these predictions of doom and gloom for 2025. That have not been realized, and the U.S. economy in particular has been relatively strong in the past 6 months. And so the main issue to me is whether that's going to continue or not.
Interesting. Very good. Craig Perong, thank you so much. He's a professor of finance and director of the Global Energy Management Institute at the University of Houston. We hope you have a very happy new year, and we can't wait to talk to you again, sir. Thank you so much.
Right. Likewise. Thank you.
All right. When we come back, I'll get to more of your text messages and ask you, you know, about some of the experiences you might have had in the past where you're encouraged to get in on a trend worth a hot new thing to buy or a meme stock, something that you panic bought? I'm curious to talk to you about some of that because I think I've done some of that in the past, but nothing that's really worked out terribly poorly for me. So we can talk about some of that coming up next. The way to get in touch is the Okunard Jewelers Talking Text Line, 504-260-1870. BRB. Quick, look out the window. Look at this big, beautiful sky. What a day. I didn't quite plan the show this way today, that we'd be talking about high finance all day. We're talking about commodities markets, and we're talking about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau in the 3 o'clock hour. But at 2 o'clock, just about 20 minutes, we'll be talking to Debbie Bressler, and we'll talk a little bit about what's happening tonight with the New Year's celebrations along the riverfront. This is a project that WWL and our sister station Magic 101.9 are very happy to be a part of every year. Debbie does an incredible job pulling this all together. A lot of community partners have to get involved to make something like this happen. And it really is, I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke. Like, this is really regarded as one of the best fireworks shows in the country. So if you have never seen it, maybe this is your year. I don't know if you have New Year's plans or not already in place, but I would encourage you to come down here tonight. You know, get a nice meal if you can. Maybe you'll meet some Georgia Bulldogs fan, or maybe you'll meet some Ole Miss Rebels people, because brothers and sisters, they are out there. If you're in town from Oxford or from Georgia, thank you for being here with us. Be safe tonight. You know, somebody texted in earlier and says, is it possible to set up a shop and sell fireworks in Orleans Parish? And it is not. That's, I think, why there's the big fireworks outlet, like right on the other side of the Twin Spans when you get to Slidell. Because everybody from New Orleans wants to buy fireworks and shoot them off in town, which, you know, not for nothing, you're also not allowed to do, but people tend to ignore that. But it got me wondering, you know, maybe you have a tip that you want to share if you're a person that has pets that freak out when there's fireworks going off all over the neighborhood. You have a dog or a cat or a snake or a handful of mice. I don't know. Whatever your pet is, if they freak out when there's fireworks, you know, what do you do? Is there something you offer them? Like, you give them a gummy or a thunder jacket, or you just hide with them under the bed? I don't know. I mean, don't give your dog a gummy unless it's a special gummy for dogs. Wow, I'm kind of out over my skis here, aren't I? Well, you think that's funny?
No.
Don't give gummies to dogs.
I'm not going to win any favors here from anybody, but I hope my neighbor's dogs do freak out because of the fire.
What? Why?
Every morning when I come to work, there's some presents left in my lawn.
I don't know.
I don't know if my neighbor's aware of what his Dachshunds are doing, but it's like, dude, I'm not doing that, clearly. He has like two little weenie dogs.
That's especially obnoxious.
Yeah,
that's worse than if it was a different breed of dog.
Yeah, and I don't think he walks the dogs. He just lets them out. So I don't think he realizes that some of his dogs are leaving presents in my lawn.
I see.
So I might have to go tell him. But hopefully for the New Year's, maybe the fireworks will freak him out and scare him.
Maybe they'll stay inside.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll leave some presents in their kitchen under their dining room table, you know.
Right.
Just for a change. Anyway, there's a big concert tonight happening at Waldenburg Park. It starts at 9 o'clock. It's got a bunch of great local bands in it. You know some of these people. Dumpsta Funk, Sweet Crude, DJ Captain Charles. That all leads up to the Midnight Flirtily Drop and that big fireworks show that happens at midnight. I don't know if you ever watched the fireworks at Crescent Park, which is, you know, there's Waldenburg Park kind of in front of the aquarium, and then there's the Moonwalk, you know, in front of Jackson Square, and then new, like in the last 10, 12 years, is Crescent Park, which we've talked about on this program a bunch. It's usually closed around 7 o'clock, 7:30, something like that. But on the 4th of July and on New Year's Eve, it makes great, great fireworks viewing. I'm thinking about people especially who grew up in New Orleans and were here, you know, in some of these downtown neighborhoods, maybe in the 50s, 60s, 70s. And you move to the suburbs, or you move to the North Shore, and you haven't come back down here and seen what this part of the riverfront looks like, because it was never available for public access until quite recently, which means you get a view of the city skyline that most people never really get a chance to see. You know, like if you take the ferry across the river to Algiers, or you live on the West Bank, you know, you get to see the city skyline every day, okay? But there's a certain angle of, you know, the downtown area, the cathedral, the skyscrapers, the bridge, that kind of nobody got to see unless you were a riverboat captain or, you know, you worked on the docks or something or on the wharves. But now you can see it. And the fireworks show there looks incredible. I've seen it many times. Strongly recommend that you go down there and check that out. Let's jump over here to the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line. Looks like Coach Edwa is here today. I think that's Edwa. Says, stay safe tonight, everyone. Along with the fireworks, some idiots fire guns into the sky, and a bullet can travel 10 or more miles before plummeting downward. I hope it doesn't need saying, but don't shoot your guns into the sky, man. We're not doing that. Maybe there was a time when we did that routinely. I was not around for that, but I really hope nobody is firing weapons into the sky tonight. That is a terrible, terrible idea. James on the North Shore says, it's lovely out here today. I'm working on the flower beds in Mandeville. Thank you, James. Soothsayer Sam says, in skydiving circles, we call this severe clear. LOL. Yeah, it is beautiful. You really cannot see a cloud in the sky out here. It's gorgeous. All right, Coleman, let's take a break here, and we'll come back, get a couple more texts in here before we do the news, and then we'll talk to Debbie Ressler at 2:10. After that, we'll do the news bomb, and then I don't have another scheduled interview until 3:25, so it's just you and me. We can kind of talk about whatever you want. It's effectively a holiday. The office building is closed. The Odyssey offices are closed. Just me and Coleman and Chris Miller, so let's hang out. I'm Ian Hoke sitting in for Scoot. I'll be right back after this. I'm made to understand that last week on the Scoot Show, while I was in New Hampshire, we did not talk about Lane Kiffin and his trip to the grocery store.
I can say I don't recall.
Where he came back with the grocery basket. All right, we'll find a little bit of time in the next hour to talk about that. I still want to talk about, if you have just 10 seconds to run into a Buc-ee's and come out with one thing to eat, where price is no object. You just got to go in, you get a sandwich, or you get some nugs, or you get some jerky, or you get some of the like frosted cashews, whatever they got in there. What are you taking? If you got 10 seconds to run into a Buc-ee's, grab one thing of food, and run back out, what is it? Text me right now, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jewelers talking text line, 504-260-1870. What's one thing that you would go take from a Buc-ee's if you only had 10 seconds. We'll come back after the news with Debbie Bressler and more of your answers about Buc-ee's. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Stick around. You're listening to WWL.